Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Welcome to the second part of the Strip Search commentary and discussion. We're going to be looking at the second half of the Strip Search competition and the finale. But before that, we're going to talk with a couple of people that were supposed to be on the other show, and we're going to get their impressions of it. But this week, we are welcoming back Mary Cagle from Kiwi Blitz. Thank you for coming back.
Greetings.
Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Thank you.
And the two people that we missed out on last time is Monty Road.
Hey,
how's it going? And Terrence McManus.
Hey, everyone.
So before we get into actually talking about the second half of Strip Search and the finale, I would like to see if you guys had any particular comments of the first half before we roll into that. We'll start with Monty.
Well, I guess my commentary is just more general about the show itself rather than going into, say, particular commentary on, the first half or the second half of the series. It's been interesting watching this show go through its initial first season because I think they're really trying to figure out what the audience for Strip Search is. You do have the creative crowd, you have the web cartoonist, but during the earlier part of the show, you did have quite a few nods to, trying to promote the Penny Arcade brand. You had the episode with Ping Pong. You had, various incorporations like, this was a later episode, but just when they were doing the map search and everything, you had the Penny Art. You had the convention hall of, where the Penny Arcade Expo was being held. Mm-hmm. That was mentioned. And so so you have the PA brands, you have the, aficionados, you have the creative types. You just wonder where the audience is for this show. It seems to have racked up a considerable following if you've looked at the success of various artists' Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. But I guess what's the audience for it and, what would be the content that would be best for that audience? In my general opinion, this is a great thing for web cartooning in general, just because it's more exposure the industry gets as a whole than you normally see it get. Mm-hmm. Most of what you see online is just a bunch of artists desperately trying to promote themselves. And occasionally you have, a few a few comics collectives and a few websites here and there. And you can try, posting your comics on forum boards and everything, but there's not really much that's out there to promote the industry itself. And I guess that's what I see this as the greatest value of Strip Search in general, is just that it's promoting the industry as a whole. Now, granted, it's of the greatest benefit to the 12 people that are on the show.
Right.
But, it's not like you can promote everything. It's not like you can promote everyone, but at least creates awareness that the industry is out there, and it's exposing more people to more cartoonists, which, it's a good thing in general, even if you're not directly benefiting from it.
And not even that. It's especially good because it's involving people and exposing people to good cartoonists as well, because there's an awful lot of self-promotion that's out there which is done wrong or poorly, but these guys have been really built up and shown here's a bunch of really, really capable people and here's what they can do when they're given the resources.
And so Terrence, what about your impressions of the beginning and first half of Strip Search?
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut Monty off entirely.
No, that's fine. He's spoken enough.
I really love one of the things that I really got from the first half, which you guys did talk about in the last one as well, and really followed into the second half, especially near the end, which we'll get into later. Just the really great relationships between all these people that were in the house, not like a lot of other reality TV that you see where it's everyone is just trying to find the next opportunity to put the knife into somebody else's back. This was just a whole bunch of people together in the one place working towards the same goal, being, you know, perfectly willing to give a hand to each of the others to help them along the way. And that bit of sort of, you know, comradeship going through it was just really great and really kind of refreshing to see all these people. And just, and it also, it made what each of them were doing, it made it better. So you were getting some really good, some really impressive results out of these little the daily challenges. And
let's just be a little bit fair. Part of that has to do with the fact that the way that it's structured really doesn't allow a lot of backstabbing.
Amy did try to do some scheming early on, but it's just the way the competition's structured is that you can put two people up for elimination, but you first have to win the contest to put people up for elimination. And even though you put two people up for elimination, one of them's going to end up coming back.
Exactly.
And so you can't do the backstabbing social politics, which thrives on a lot of reality shows.
Well, let me give an example. This is what MasterChef does. And there is a team competition where all the competitors are split into two teams, and the losing team, whoever the team captain is, gets to pick who has immunity from the elimination challenge, and the team captain can pick themselves and everyone else except for the final two. And if they do pick themselves, even if they were the worst in the team challenge, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh my God, because everyone's expecting you to not do that if you were the worst one, even if you were the captain. That's an example of where backstabbing happens, and strip search isn't structured to allow that, because there were no team challenges. Everyone was basically just a group of individuals, and by being individuals, oddly enough, it promotes a system that does not allow backstabbing.
Do you think that was a conscious thing, or just sort of happened that way?
I think it sort of happened that way, if I have to be honest. I'm looking at it, and because there is a lot of reality shows stick in there, because I do suspect that that Mike Krolik does watch a lot of reality shows.
Some of it's clearly shtick.
Because one of the challenges is go-kart racing, which has shit all to do with drawing comics.
Right.
And
yeah.
I mean, this there is some reality show shtick in here, and it is very obvious. And some of the challenges do have a lot to do with knowing how to run a comic and knowing how to run a brand. But yeah. Go-kart racing and pinball, you know, and ping pong and memorizing a bus tour are not that.
Mary, were you going to get in there?
The challenges at the beginning of the day, I mean, those were to just get people to loosen up for whatever challenge would be coming, the actual competitive challenge that would be coming later in the day. And so that's the thing, is that initial challenge that they were dragging everybody out to, that was just to get people to loosen up.
And also just to have fun. Mary, were you about to jump in there?
Nope.
Oh, I thought we might have cut you off.
But like I said, let's say next year's strip search, let's say Mike decides to institute where they take everyone and split them into two even sized teams and say boom, you know if you're in, you know, if your team loses, your team captain.
I don't think they'll do that.
No, yeah. I actually think they'll move more in the direction of, like, you could see the progression over the show where it became more friendly in a way, you know, where they started to care about these artists and actually want to see them succeed. So I think if anything, a second season would have a little more of that vibe just straight from the get-go.
And also, I mean, public opinion is sort of swaying that way as well, because people are commenting on how much they like it.
Yeah. I wanted to see a whole lot more of not the competition. It's just a lot of more of like everybody just hanging out, talking and maybe seeing what they're doing in their spare time, if they're doing extra sketches or drawing for whatever. I would like to see a little bit more of getting to know the actual artist, at least from an audience standpoint, and maybe because I'm also a creator myself, I wanted to see more of the reality of just the around the house. And it sounds like some of that stuff will probably make it into the DVDs or something.
Part of the thing is there was no real set format with it. If they had a 42-minute format like a normal television show, 42 minutes per episode versus how long it takes to tell the story we want to per episode, they might actually have some of that. Because when you look at it, the first episode was, 12 minutes, and then the second one was 22. The third one was – it was whatever, how long it took to tell the story.
Right. But I guess it's all the stuff that I want to see, I guess, would be considered filler or fluff. You know, that's the sort of stuff I kind of wanted to see. Just the, you know, the whatever. I wanted to, you know, see how people. And about 2 hours ago, I actually had Abby on Skype and I interviewed her and we talked a little bit about how. How things were, she said at the beginning of Strip Search, it was a lot of just kind of like getting to know each other. And then it really did just turn into like hanging out. There wasn't sort of, you know, discussions about how to win the show or whatnot. It was just, you know, a bunch of creatives just hanging out together. And I think there's
an important thing to remember about the general creation of the show is that this was all created on a $300,000 budget. Mm-hmm. And that's from production to editing. And when you're talking about a project of this kind, that's not really a lot of money to work with. And that's so, true. Graham's part of the production staff, I know. And so some of the people he worked with, you know, it's this really small company. I'm not exactly sure how big it is, but it's not that big. And so there's only so much, you know, I mean, people, there are only so many people available to record. There are only so many people available to edit. Mm-hmm. And it's just the sheer amount of material. And plus, they're just trying to figure out what their audience wants. And towards the end of the show, they did start incorporating more of the, you know, just, you know, the artists being the artists themselves.
Let's see here. Our previous strip search episode, we talked about all the way up to Elimination 5, episode 16. And since then, I think there were a lot of really good episodes that a lot of people at home, a lot of creatives at home could take well to heart, such as the Sketching for Tips episode, where they were basically in the sort of the fake convention and just kind of looking at a lot of things, bringing things to attention that some people, granted, it was maybe a little bit farcical, a little bit of a farce but I've never been at a super huge convention before where you'd have to watch out for people coming by and stealing stuff or.
I can say pretty much anything that they did to those kids, you'll encounter at some point at a big enough convention.
Right. But they got it all at once.
That is true. I've been to several big conventions. I haven't had table at many, but I'm going to definitely change that in the upcoming years. But yeah, it's actually amazing because lots of artists now have, the bigger artists. So now have things where it's like, oh, we don't, you know, you just get in line, you get an autograph, no talking. And, I'm not kidding. They actually have handlers and stuff like that. It's kind of amazing, but you could definitely tell that this is a competition that they're running as they want to run it. I mean, but at the same time, they are, I do see some reality show shtick in here because it's just the nature of the beast. And like I said, I do think that those two guys are fans of that kind of shtick. I really do think so. It's there. It's impossible to deny that it's there.
But when it's there, it's like they're also sort of there. It's obvious that they're doing that. I mean, especially when they're just up there and doing that serious sort of talking and the whole they're being sarcastic at the same time. It's I don't think they're taking that part that seriously.
I'm not saying they're taking it seriously. I'm saying they're doing it.
True.
they're pretty keenly aware of it too, though.
All right.
So
I mean, they're all that's missing is you know, ready, set, you know, draw. It's like it's almost like a la cuisine.
It's ready, set, art.
Art.
Well, whatever. the point is, it's almost like a la cuisine.
Yeah, I don't watch a whole lot of TV, but I'm pretty sure you're referencing another show.
Iron Chef.
Okay. All right.
You've never seen Iron Chef?
I've maybe seen half of it once, like 10 years ago, but...
I always thought they were saying Iron Cuisine.
Allez Cuisine. It means start cooking in French. On a Japanese show.
Get it on! All right.
Seems to make sense.
I really like the contractual obligations episode where they were going through a pseudo contract.
That was the best one they did, but at the same time, they almost made the contract comically, you know, slanted, and I think part of that has to do with just the fact that those two hate contracts and the fact that they were roped under a pretty shitty contract, and everyone here that knows horror stories from other webcomic creators about these shitty contracts, especially what's his name? Kaufman. He had that.
Oh yeah.
He got screwed bad.
Yeah, we had him on the show, and when we had him on the show, he was still trying to get the property back from Platinum in such a way that he chose what he was saying on the show very carefully to not throw anybody on the bus, because he was trying to get it back and saying,
it's under the bus, Fest, not on the bus. If you throw them on the bus, you're just taking them to the airport. You throw them under the bus, you're destroying them.
Right. And he didn't want to do that because he wanted the property back. And so it was really surprised at how well he handled himself.
I think he sold himself a little short there, because he pretty much, you know, it guaranteed that if it ever goes beyond where it is now, and Hero by Night does have a lot of power behind it and has some legs to it.
Mm-hmm.
If it ever takes off beyond where it is, he pretty much guarantees he's painted it into a corner. And
right. But he at least he has the comic.
I think he still got screwed, but at least he's still creating again. And that makes me happy.
Right. Because he's just like, you know, I just want the comic back. Just anything else. It's like he just wanted some of it back. And this is that's what he felt like. At the very least, he could get at least that back, and he could be in control of the comic. And he was like, you know, if they want to make a movie about it, yeah, I don't care. Just whatever, you go make your movie, I'm going to make the comic. And so he felt it was at least a good enough trade-off, or at least a trade-off he felt he could make in his position. So, you know, that's the thing. You really want to make sure you pay attention beforehand.
Yeah, what kills me about that particular situation is he knew exactly what the contract said, but I heard him on a podcast saying, yeah, but they're not going to do that. They're people. You know, we're all just people. Oh, they wouldn't do that to me. And that's even worse in some ways.
That's the thing. Yes, they're people, but at the same time, I've talked to lots of people that as soon as contracts are involved, boom. I mean, and the thing is that amazes me is these webcomic contracts have movie treatment clauses in them already. It's versus people just writing movie treatments at the beginning of a comic, even if the comic is shit. It's like, you know, like other certain comics that have Kickstarters for movies that I won't mention.
Yeah, I saw one that somebody. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about this.
Oh, no, it's. There's some people, because anybody comes in.
I'm talking about one specific person, and this person also claims that Kevin Smith said awesome about it. But what Kevin Smith actually did was almost flippantly insulting. He wrote Kevin Smith, quote, awesome about the comic and the movie treatment, and it's like, actually, if you listen to what Kevin Smith said, it's really insulting.
Awesome was just maybe one word that he said in there at some point.
No, he said awesome, I'd read that. He didn't even read it. He just read the premise. He said awesome, I'd read that.
Well, you know, it's a hustle. It's, you want to market it that way. Well, yeah.
That's actually illegal. It's Monster Cable got in trouble for doing shit like that with Engadget.
Really?
Yeah, what happened was Monster Cable quoted Engadget saying the best audio cables we have ever used. And what Engadget actually wrote in the review was, "We will never say Monster Cable is the best cable audio cables we have ever used."
Yeah, that's actually like a form of libel. That's taking it out of context.
Yeah.
So just cut a few words out of the sentence. That's all.
And Engadget like called
those words were in the right order.
Yeah, they put the words in the right order, but they like took out the beginning of the sentence at the end of the sentence, and yeah, that's the thing. You're not allowed to do that. And Kevin Smith, awesome. It's like Kevin Smith reads the premise out loud and says, "Awesome, I'd read that." And he said it in that same deadpan. Like,
I don't know, but that would be a full sentence though. I mean, how do you translate emphasis and the way you say something into text, you know?
The big thing, though, is everyone in Hollywood knows that that certain comic was optioned as a movie script for years. Mm. So he was being sarcastic as shit.
All right. You'll have to share this after the show.
Yeah.
If you don't want to share it on the show, because I'm curious now. But we should probably get back to Strip Search, but we're going to take our first break and we'll be right back.
This program is part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. You can find and follow us on Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Just search for Webcast Beacon. Have thoughts or questions on an episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922 or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Comics, art, and writing discussions, interviews, news, and reviews at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
No, I put quotes there, so I'm quoting the name of the comic.
Oh, that one! Oh, come on! Oh, geez, I could rant about that one. I have a
You know, if we just edit that down, though,
I have.
It looks like you just proposed.
You have to be like, do that though, because now we're in a break. I can say his name.
Well, I'm actually still in recording right now, but no, it's that's.
like I said, if you actually hear,
it should be called Pretentious the Comic.
Like I said, if you actually hear the audio of what Kevin Smith said, he is being sarcastic and mean as fuck.
Yeah. No. All right. Strip Search. Anyway, Strip Search. So going through the second half, this is one thing that was funny. I was like, yeah, Strip Search. I'll catch up on that at some point. Then it started going and it's like, we should probably talk about this as Terrence and Monty had suggested to me. And then they weren't on the first episode. And then I like plowed through it and was like, man, this is really awesome. Because I was a big fan of Face Off, the makeup artist's reality competition show, where it wasn't vicious and there were real artists doing real artful things and communicating like real artists amongst each other and helping each other out. It was fantastic. And I really liked how this one was going and everyone seemed really, really real and having a lot of fun with it. And I was really wanting more. I wanted to it wanted me to do art again. You know, I was mostly just doing podcasts, not drawing a whole lot. So I don't know how was everybody else's feeling for the whole series as it was going.
Having this on in the background while drawing was really inspiring, especially those elimination episodes. And when you look around and see how people have really got on board with that and jumped in doing their own versions of those elimination episodes, the play at home gig, that has been something that's been kind of exciting and really creatively firing as well. So it's been really good for that.
Personally expressing my own opinion, I find it kind of funny watching the crowd reaction in forums. I've worked for 2 years as a character artist in an international theme park, and I've also trained under a professional concept artist. And so I just find it funny how people are like, they find the whole 90-minute elimination round like it's this daunting thing, where I'm used to people who work very quickly, and I'm also used to having people talk all sorts of crap about you as you draw.
I know. It's the thing is, I'm actually amazed at how much leeway they're given. It's because I've written and drawn scripts like super quick in the past, and like I said in the last episode, the t-shirt challenge was like, that's it? Because I've done t-shirts. I've worked at screen printers before. I was a jack of all trades graphic designer when I first started my career, so I had to learn all these different things. So I had an attitude of that's it? With all these people freaking out and a 90-minute elimination, it's like,
well, what do you mean, that's it? What more did you want from people that may or may not have even designed a t-shirt experience before? What more did you want from just the regular people? What did you want?
I wanted more things focused on controlling the brand. Like I actually liked the how to handle trolls challenge. I thought that should have been more expanded upon.
Mm-hmm.
More things about internet, you know, projecting an internet persona, stuff like that. The contract thing was pretty good too. And the convention stuff, that's all good stuff. And other things in that venue should have been more focused on. And you know, the whole building the brand thing. Because
did anyone else find it really interesting there was really nothing at all on websites and how to do anything to do with that for a webcomic?
You're right. They should. I think part of the thing was whoever was going to win was going to be on Penny Arcade, and they have their own CMS, I believe. Let me take a look at their.
Well, that was how
you make something like that entertaining, though.
Yeah.
Well, the whole point they said at the beginning the whole point of Strip Search was not to find like the best, you know, cartoonist amongst them, but to find a new person to bring into the Penny Arcade family. They stated that. The whole package, and particularly for the Penny Arcade family. So they were upfront about that with everybody. So that's how it was. But
I'm looking at their site right now.
Ben, what I wanted to ask you, I would like to see, you know, more of everything itself, especially the stuff that's more applicable to being as a creator and creating things. But this was a lot of it. The competition was like, how well could you right now do all this stuff? Were you looking for more of like more pointers and tutorial sort of things? Because that's what I'm kind of hearing from you. If you
not so much. I was looking more stuff like, When they prefaced the legal challenge, they said, as you know, when Penny Arcade first started, they pretty much signed away the rights really early because they don't know how to read contracts. So here it's stuff like that. It's like, you know, Mike and the other guy hit a bump in the road early in their career, and this is to teach you about that bump in the road.
Okay. And did you want them to like give them time to like prepare for these particular challenges, or?
Well, not prepare, but more challenges like that, you know?
Oh, okay.
Because like I said, they all had challenges like that. I could imagine a challenge like where they say, okay, here's a mock-up of the merchandise you're going to get. And there's five pieces of merchandise, and you have to like pick the one that's like the most wrong or the one that needs to go back. And you have to be able to say this one needs to go back and have to be able to like have the patience to do that stuff like that. You know what I mean? Because that's stuff that creators that are trying to monetize have to deal with is merchandising, dealing with you know, the people who create the merchandise, mm-hmm. most of them are from China. They send you whatever, and 95% of the time there's something wrong with it, and you have to send it back. You have to negotiate with them. You have to explain to them why it's wrong. You have to explain to them why you're not going to pay for it again. They have to make it right, and you're not paying for it again. That sort of thing.
I think there's a couple factors that we have to remember here, like especially in terms of designing websites. I don't know how you would program a website in 90 minutes or whatever. You know, they had to pick things that specifically could be done in that short amount of time.
Well, not 90 minutes. Maybe if they gave them like a day or two to, but even still, I mean,
even in the context of one of those challenges, though, you could have had something like a cork board or a piece on the floor and a whole lot of bunch of cutouts of various, you know, various things that could go on a website. Arrange them in the, you know, the best possible way or something. Just
figure out where the banner ad goes. Figure out where if you'll have a side ad, if where the side ad will go, stuff like that. Yeah, I kind of agree.
Where you put your strip.
The only other thing is, you got to remember, like, if people who are not web cartoonists who are just general audiences, how excited are they about banner ad placement?
Yeah.
But who was point. This? Who was Strip Search for? What was the audience for? I get the feeling a huge part of the audience were other creators.
That's true. I think it's a crossover between creators, Penny Arcade fans, and just general people who are interested in comics.
It'd be interesting if we could figure out what the size of audience was to everything. But, you know, it's like I hear a lot more, it's probably because I just mostly follow other creators, that I hear most of them just talking about and what they would like to see. You know, like Ben here would be a prime example of they'd want to see more of that aspect. It's like the people that watch Face Off or any of those other sorts of shows, why do they, like, who's the audience for that? And I'm not, and that one could translate well because there was a lot of like creation involved versus just sort of like going on the go-kart ride. And I guess, you know, I do agree with Ben. I would like to see more of the practical things. But in general, I would like to see a lot more art creation on camera.
Like I said, what I like is the whole the two, like Jerry and Mike, they came across this hurdle when they started out. So we're going to simulate the same hurdle. It's a good example is... And Monty's going to speak in a second. A good example of this is in a very early season of Hell's Kitchen. Chef Ramsay said that when his first restaurant opened, the air conditioning stopped working in the kitchen. So to simulate that, he turned the air conditioning off in the kitchens because. I like shit like that.
Had nothing to do with the program being called Hell's Kitchen, eh?
No, but like I said, it's stuff like that where the expert, the mentor character, whoever it is, said when I first started, I had this happen to me. So we're simulating that happening to you now. How do you handle it?
Hmm.
Stuff like that. I want to see more stuff like that because that's the kind of stuff where you can actually learn a little bit more, where the general audience can learn a little bit more about the quirks of the webcomic industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the webcomic audience can go like, yeah, I had to deal with that too. I'm kind of interested about this.
As far as I could tell, Strip Search really had four main pillars it was based on. The first thing was promote the Penny Arcade brand, which, I mean, obviously, they know they're creating the show, they're hosting it, so of course they're going to do it. It's just sound business practice. And then there was also promoting the artists who are on the show. And then, of course, you know, it was kind of a combination of educational for other web cartoonists. And, I mean, there was also the entertainment aspect, too, and that's the thing is that...
You forgot, you know, the Wacom commercialization, too.
What... Well, what did you say? Could you repeat that?
You forgot all the Wacom commercials they put in there, too.
That's sponsorship. You can't do that without sponsorship. That
kind of, well, I guess that ties in the thing about promoting the brand.
I know, but it reminds me of, and I'm going to bring MasterChef up again, where they say, we have premium steaks from Walmart today. All the produce is from Walmart today.
It's like, well, that's what you do.
Wacom actually makes quality stuff.
Well, that's what you do. You can't escape, you know, somebody sponsoring your part of thing. Now, it can become too ridiculous, but, you know, it's expected, I would say.
Yeah, but I think in that case, they would have been using Wacom's anyways, so I think it was really smart of them to, hey, why not get it sponsored meanwhile?
All right, Monty, did we cut you off there? Sorry.
I was just going to say it's just if you focus too heavily on the educational, you might generate more of, you know, an audience which just wants to watch reality show. And, I mean, obviously, if you don't have enough of, you know, educating people about the profession, then that, you know, that alienates some of the creatives somewhat. It's just, it's, you can't strike a balance, a perfect balance. People are always going to want more of this or less of mm-hmm. this. And it's kind of what type of audience are you targeting and why? Because if you really want to bring in more people from the outside who might potentially follow the artist, you might want to focus more on the entertainment aspect. Because, I mean, if you focus more on the educational aspect, then you're focusing on comics creators. And there's only so many people out there who do that, though they are far more passionate about it. And so it's like, you know, what group of people is it best to try and bring in so you can have them follow these artists after they're off the show? Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes for good entertainment, but honestly, that's the thing, is that when you're crafting this show, you want to, you know, get an audience that will be motivated to actually follow the creators after everything's wound up and over. Who's going to stick with them? And honestly, exactly. I don't know the answer to that.
Exactly. And, but at the same time, I'm going to bring up other reality shows as examples because they're the best examples I have. I used to watch American Chopper when it first started because I learned a lot about, you know, the industry of making custom motorcycles. It was a lot of education in there about how to do gold leafing, how to do certain things with the paint and other processes with the metals. It was very interesting.
But then they found
out that the Tuttles fight a lot. And then it became a soap opera with less of that and more of junior and senior screaming at each other until it became American Chopper Junior versus Senior. And I stopped way before it got to that point because it stopped became educational to me. And I really do think that the earlier format, where it's more educational about the process, is a better format and would have a bigger draw.
Mm-hmm. It harkens back to the How It's Made series, where you're kind of curious, how do they make that? And you go, but then again, it is like for something like the American Choppers or any sort of thing like that, it has the potential of, well, what new thing can you do? Yes, we've seen that before. And that's where I think Face Off, I'm going to mention Face Off again, really took off because of all the constantly changing and different factors that went into it. So you saw something new almost every single challenge. So it wasn't like this is, you know, very, very new, very different locale changes. And then there was like that show that took off, like a spinoff version where they basically made a movie set, which was also really interesting. And I think a lot of people really do want that. And I hope for more of that instead of just the breaking down into, you know, the real life BS. But...
We didn't have a lot of tears in this in Strip Search, which was kind of good, just enough there to add some flavor.
like everyone said, the it wasn't really structured to where there was a chance for a lot of backstabbing, because everyone pretty much realized early on that there was really no way to backstab.
Yeah. Yeah, and any of the tears that did happen, I mean, it was stress tears and joyful tears, really. And
let me just say right out, Lexi was hands down the best artist out of all of them. No, she really was.
Yeah, she was. She was the most technically proficient. There's no question about that.
I think she was definitely the best illustrator. If you're talking about comic artist, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, because that can be quite suggestive. But, you know, there's a difference between your technical talent and just what you do for art as being quality, which I will defend to the death for people that will argue that point.
Well, if you're an illustrator with the skills that Lexi had, I mean, you can always dial it down, simplify what you do to be cartoony. That's not a problem. But the thing about it is with comic strips, it's art and writing, and depending on what type of approach you take, you know, there might be more emphasis on the writing. I mean, you can make stick figure comics work if you want to do visual gags like we were talking about in the previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have those art skills to nail your gag, and so it's basically, it's just a matter of having the art skills to go with whatever format of writing you prefer to do.
I also noticed that that Mike and Jerry, they at first seemed very hostile towards I think his name was Ty, because his style was very Mike-esque. You know, it was very.
You're thinking about Alex.
I'm thinking of Alex. Let's see here.
Well, is that the first artist who was eliminated who drew kind of like Mike in the past?
Yeah, Alex. That's Alex. Yes. Yeah. Pardon me. You're right. It's Alex.
I wouldn't say they were hostile towards him.
He was very hostile because he says, "I just hate seeing my same mistakes, early mistakes, being repeated by someone else." That's very hostile.
Well, it is, and I do remember that one because he was kind of like, you know, standing behind him, like looking at us, like he basically says one thing about like, I can see a lot of you're doing what I did, you know,
five years ago,
and then he paused. And then he also said, including my mistakes, and then just kind of walked away. I didn't think that was as vicious as in he's really trying to say you're without trying to like totally give him like pointers because he shouldn't be at that point. But it seemed like he was more so trying to say, you better, you know, step it up or, you know, he had like, it was like, it looked like he was like the most like PA inspired sort of comic strip, which is a failure for like a lot of people that are trying to copy that PA like style and think that's how it works. At least that's what I gathered anyway. I don't know if that's appropriate, but.
Well, not all of them have it, but several of them do. A good example is a lot of them do have PA inspiration in their art style. It looks like to me in the selection process, they did gravitate to people that did have that inspiration, did have that influence. And because I'm looking at the gallery pages for the artists again, and you know, I see it. I see the inspiration. They definitely are inspired by PA. Not all of them, but most of them are.
Well, Penny Arcade, though, Penny Arcade's artistic style is really more of a contemporary trend rather than just Penny Arcade because, I mean, a lot of artists, you know, tend towards simplicity, and it's, well, I mean, you see it in animation, and I mean, obviously in comic strips, ideal, especially if you're trying to crank out work quick, is just to be using simplified artwork that focuses mostly on rhythm and shapes. And so I don't think it's directly Penny Arcade inspired. Rather, it's just, you know, they're all part of the same, you know, artistic trend that's going throughout contemporary American culture.
That's half true. But at the same time, and this is a story back from when I hung out in the BlamBot forums, BlamBot, great place to get good free web comic fonts. In the BlamBot forum, someone posted a comic page for a webcomic they were starting. It was very technically well-drawn, but it was very PA. The example, I can't find the strip anymore, but let me give you a walkthrough of it. It's two guys. One guy is leaning in close to a radio saying, gee, this radio is really hot. I wonder how hot it is. And then the second guy pretty much pushes the first guy's face on and says, yes, of course it's fucking hot. See? And it's and the delivery is very Gabe and Tycho.
But even then, I mean, yeah, they could have ripped that right off of Penny Arcade, but that kind of comedy's been around for a long time, too.
Right.
That's true.
But there's definitely people out there who are trying to be Penny Arcade. I mean, I wouldn't deny that.
And like I said, it was the style, the delivery, the color palette, all that together in that instance on that what I saw it in the BlamBot forums is like, it makes me realize that lots of people, you know, that are technically good artists default to this. And that kind of makes me sad a little bit, especially when you have Mike and Jerry, you know, looking at strips going, you know, talking about the punchline, talk as if if the punchline is the most important part of the Elimination Challenge.
Right.
And nowhere in the criteria was it said that the strip has to be a punchline type strip.
Right. It's
it's easier to execute those in a short period of time, though, because if you want to tell a meaningful story, it's generally hard to tell those in a page. It can be done, but it's not easy to do, and also you only have 90 minutes and you have to work for two random words. That's a great exercise for comedy, not necessarily other forms of storytelling, though, especially if you want a decent end product.
There was a really good example of that in the Elimination Challenge between Monica and Lexi with the dino rollers, where Lexi had the comedy dino rollers being roller skates, which are also dinosaurs and eat people.
Yes.
Based up against the one from Monica, which was, sort of a deep, sort of psychological where she is in her life sort of strip. And they tried to give it a bit of credence in the what we saw of the judging, but then they still, at the end, came back to this one makes us laugh.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Mike and Jerry wanted a funny comic.
And I think that that's sort of limiting it, because you're basically saying a webcomic, or at least the webcomics they're looking for, are a replacement of the daily strips that are newspapers. And I think that that sort of like confines and boxes in the webcomic formula far more than it should be, especially to something that's trying to introduce it or promote it, the whole medium, to a broad audience like Strip Search is trying to do. And you see what I'm saying? It's because I remember when in the final challenge, when everyone came back, and I forgot who it was, but one person said that they were going to like release pages in chapters at a time.
That was Abby. She was going to release scenes per week, and however many strips or panels it would take to tell a scene, so that you have a whole chunk each week. That's what her goal was.
Exactly. And like I said, that's the kind of thinking that I want to see more of. I want to see more people that do that sort of thing, that try to come up with different ways of telling stories using the web and using comics, using web as the delivery system and using comics as the medium.
All right. Hang on one second. Yeah. Mary, have you been able to get in here and weigh in?
Oh, sure. No, I mean, the only thing I was thinking was that, it is Strip Search, but we kind of had this conversation last podcast. I don't think they're, delegitimizing story comics by not making that the focus of their show.
Well, I'm not saying not making the focus, but I would like to see like a dark horse come in that says, I'm doing a story comic and I'm coming in. And that would sort of make things interesting. It would also bring to attention to the people who are viewing this that might not know about too many story comics that that it can be done and there are ways to do it.
That could almost be an audience-focused thing, though, if they are dragging a lot of people in from the Penny Arcade strip themselves, giving them something more of what they're familiar with. But, yeah, there is value in trying to broaden horizons.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is that gag humor, though, does catch easier with an audience, just because there's not a story you have to sink yourself into. It's not like, you miss something for 6 months, jump back into it, and then you've missed a whole bunch of crap and you have to commit the time to read back into the story. Rather, it's just with a gag comic, you can pick up wherever and keep going, and more or less it still works. And so that's the thing, is that gag comics are more approachable. And it's just also with the budget they have, with the format they're operating, you need something that you can execute in a shorter period of time. And so that's basically, you really can't, unless you're trying to do gag, you can't really do anything in a shorter period of time than gag work. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You can do a story in that amount of time.
And some
I do think
did.
Monica actually did a very good job of executing that kind of comic in that length of time.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I hate to bring up myself as an example in this, but
no, you don't.
Well, it happened last time, so let's do it again.
But for over 5 years, I was able to do five pages a week. It's
they weren't in color.
It. and hold a job and go to school.
Yeah. You're awesome, Ben. We all know it. But here's the thing. I was like, while watching, it was nice for them to like look at it and like understand that some of them were high concept or not. And I was really as like the dinosaur one in particular. I mean that story, that one was a whole story. That was phenomenal. And it's like, how do you, I mean, clearly this is something that they have to take into consideration for next year. Cause I'm pretty sure if anything that they're going to be called out on, it's particularly going to be the story versus short form decisions that they made. And I don't know. Some of them, and they even in the finale, they had a discussion when they were looking at Katie versus Abby about what they were looking for. And wait a minute. Does that mean that we're editors at this point? Or do we have that right? So it was nice for them to acknowledge and bring up maybe, you know, sort of questioning what their role in their decision making was. And I think it was good for them to actually show and acknowledge that position. But clearly it was well poised to go for the short form style.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about the finale episode a little bit, the last three episodes with the being sent home to come up with the overall concept of the new webcomic and then come back with it? What do people think about that?
I think they gave him too much time. And I think part of that was because some creators, if you give them too much time, do less than under the gun. They, you know, Mike and Jerry even brought that up that, you know, they said if you put Abby under the gun, all of a sudden she can make great stuff. But if you give her a lot of time.
Yeah. But with what she presented, which I don't think was a great idea, was she grabbed something that was in the middle of her story, of her six strips for that thing. So you didn't get, because she still wanted to do the story, but the problem with her grabbing something in the middle, the characters or that scene wasn't poised to work. If you just came across it, you kind of needed to know a little bit more of the characters for the full effect of it, which is a little bit of, but that is certainly the thing. And I think maybe if they were given like 1 month, that would.
Well, you also got to remember like Katie, I believe at that point probably still had a full-time animation job. So I don't think it was too unreasonable for them to give them some extra time.
But like I said, I think part of that was also to give them, like I said, enough rope to hang them by, because if you give some creators a lot of time, they make less. If you give a creator like one night to finish a comic, all of a sudden, oh my God, they're Da Vinci. If you give them 2 weeks, they're
no, crap. I totally see that.
Yeah, in a way,
it's
the opposite of the challenges that they had in the 90-minute eliminations. Like that is a real concern that you need to know how to balance.
It would have been
time management. Big thing in webcomics. Maybe they should have had a time management challenge.
They should have had a 24-hour comic challenge. That would have been rough.
The thing is, Fess, every one of those guys did one of those before.
I know, but still.
Well, that would have been interesting because that would have been one of the very few, besides the actual drawing, knowing how to draw a strip. That would have been one of the few things where all the contestants might have been evenly weighted then, because with their wide variety of backgrounds and capabilities, a lot of those challenges had people like the merchandising challenge, the set up your booth challenge, had a lot of people who had done it over and over and over, and a lot of people that had never done it before.
Right. You couldn't do it with like, there wouldn't be enough space for like everybody, but maybe like the final four or something maybe toned back a little bit. But it would have been really, I think it would have been an interesting challenge for like giving them like a huge swath of time. I don't know, because sometimes you can get amazing stuff out of a 24-hour comic. Granted, you're kind of burned out immediately after that.
Well, the big thing, I think the point of a 24-hour comic is you get to see the raw artist that you really don't see. That you really don't see once they're polished. You have to, and I love that sort of thing, to see who the raw artist is, to see what they're capable of doing in a short amount of time. You sort of strip away all the stuff that
their comforts.
Well, not that it's their comforts. You strip away everything that they consciously do to their art. Because now they're in a hurry. Now they're trying to get something done. And all the little things that they train themselves to do, all are gone because they're just trying to get this out.
Yeah, but you got to remember, one, that would have taken up an entire day of filming and made the cast and crew stay up for 24 hours, and then they would have just been dead for the next several days.
No, that's
and I don't think we would have gotten
right,
yeah, a lot of energy out of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and like I said, the fact of the matter is, I can guarantee that every single person on that has done a 24-hour comic before.
Well, aside from, does anybody else, before we move on to my next thoughts, does anybody else have anything they want to say about the finale?
I know that I sure hadn't been expecting them to sit down to draw another couple of strips once they'd came back from that thing. I was thinking that there might have been a bit more of a bit more judgment based on the work that they'd turned in over that time. It fed in quite nicely, though, yeah, making them do that little three-strip arc across the new little worlds they've created, just as a bit of a litmus test to see, now this is what you've done, now we'll apply some pressure to you and see what
right,
breaks and what sticks.
I think
that was
great.
Really clever.
Yeah.
Personally, I mean, I thought, yeah, I mean, Katie obviously was the best person to choose to win. I mean, she's just the most polished product out of... the thing about it is maybe Tavis or maybe Lexi could have also put up a decent product, but obviously they didn't make towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Katie was the most polished in terms of writing, in terms of artwork. Abby, I think, has more upside potential in the long haul,
mm-hmm,
but she just needs more practice. Just looking at her longer form work, the one thing that just strikes me is it's just, you got to start axing panels. It's like, you don't really need this. You could combine these two panels. You could short your phrasing here. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, initially I started out as a gag cartoonist. I started out doing three panel strips. I've also done one panel work, and I've done pages. And I mean, it's all a different form and style of writing. And it's just, the skill sets to execute those things are related, but it's just for Abby, who really hasn't done much cartooning whatsoever, to be jumping into doing a 200 page or so graphic novel. That's quite a jump.
It is.
But I one thing I really admired about her, just sort of just the frickin' going in and doing it, you know, just, you know, basically throwing down is like, I'm not going to be put up by everybody else. I'm going to show them what I got. I felt she really gave it her all when she was like going into it. Maybe overreached a little bit, but, you know, she didn't buckle.
No.
Oh yeah, she definitely, I would tend to think that for her pitch, she should have maybe made a shorter story version of her comic that encapsulated it without, you know, necessarily being part of the big book she was going to make at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make something more like a starter story that is a condensed version of, mm-hmm, not even the first chapter, but maybe a condensed version of the first act, and not even use all those elements when you do the real story. Just do it
right,
to test it out, see what the audience says about it, and make sure that, you know, make sure how they respond to the major set pieces and go from there. That's what you should do.
Yeah.
Really, yeah, a 6-page or maybe a 12-page script at most would have been the best way to kick it off.
A good example of this is in Japan, lots of comics, lots of well-known manga there have had, you know, starter issues that are completely different than what the actual manga's like. I mean,
it's a pitch.
Yeah, I'm sure some of you have seen some of these before because
it's a pilot for comics.
I know, but some right, of them are hilariously way different than the real comic. I mean,
yeah, it was like the Death Note pitch where there's an eraser that brings people back to life.
Yeah, the eraser that brings them back to life. I know. I love that.
And, man, what a story element.
No, it was actually a lot more lighthearted.
Oh, really? Really?
Versus no, it's actually kidding, like a kid, and at the end he's like, oh, I fucked up. Oh, I can bring him back. Nope, that's not how the story's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, versus and, just like
and Naruto wasn't even about ninjas.
What?
Oh, I haven't seen that
what?
One.
Really?
Well, Naruto the comic isn't about ninjas. So
that's pretty cool. Well, no, the original Naruto pitch wasn't even about ninjas at all. It was about It's weird. It's about an artist and a fox boy becomes his best friend, and something happens in the city. It all takes place in modern times, by the way. And there's no ninjas, none of the bullshit that's in the actual Naruto.
Interesting.
It just goes to show you everything's better when you add in ninjas and have people punched in the face.
At least for a while. Then I'll go to shit.
All right. So I got one more thing that I want to talk about. So we have Strip Search. It's here. It went. What would we like to see for the next Strip Search that they do? I will start off by saying, like what Ben was talking about, like the whole website thing. I don't think that's something that's practical to do, because you shouldn't be faulted for if you have a guy or somebody that makes a site for you. But I think a website layout or something like that could be used as part of next year's sort of application process, at least.
That would be a very valid competition to have.
Well, I mean, in terms of the application process, there was probably at least a little of that in, you know, you had to send them your portfolio, and the way that you presented that portfolio probably had a lot to do with it.
How did you show them your portfolio, by the way?
You just had to give them a link to a URL.
Oh, okay.
So it was an online digital portfolio.
Right.
Okay.
Where you can have a video of yourself presenting it while playing the ukulele.
what did somebody do that?
The thing is, like I said, I've been everywhere. I've had to do some interesting things to get interviews for jobs.
All right, you've told us some of your stories.
And I didn't play the ukulele, but someone else I know in the area did.
Okay,
interesting. is now a Creative director.
Did you get the job?
No, someone else did, and is now a Creative director at a very nice Creative firm.
Oh, I see.
All right, so don't play the ukulele. Try the accordion instead. Maybe that.
What I would have liked to see is maybe more challenges related to specific things about the process of making a comic, like a 90-minute challenge where this is the the premise of the comic, design for characters that are going to be the main characters of this comic, that kind of thing.
I think
there's some concepting challenges.
To keep bringing up Face Off again, one thing that they would frequently do when they're supposed to sort of figure out the type of character or design they want to do, they'd basically present everybody with basically this week's sponsor, essentially the person you're going to be working for, to create an original blah 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 character for blah 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 project. They gave them all an amount of time to sit around, sketch some ideas, look at some of the merchandise or some of the product of I think something like that would be like really good, where they started off with that sort of thing. The challenges, they get some regular prep time, and then they're led into the warehouse to create the final project. I think something like that would work really well, especially for like to get everybody in on versus just people that go to the elimination round for a challenge. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, and I would say the Wizards thing was the closest to that.
By the way, I'm looking at their store and the t-shirt's not there anymore.
Katie's t-shirt?
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
Sold out or taken down?
It's not there.
Yeah, maybe it didn't. Maybe it didn't sell well. I don't know.
It's only up for a few days.
It's hard to say with t-shirts, you know.
Well, they made a big deal about it on the.
Wait, it's right here, Camp Weedawancha.
Yeah, no. I was gonna.
I'm talking about the first challenge t-shirt.
That was up for I think about a month, and then it was taken down. It was a limited run thing.
Oh, okay.
So they like gave plenty of warning before it was going to go down, and then it did go down.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's limited edition.
Limited edition.
So you can auction that shit on eBay for a mint.
What was it? Was it Maki that did like his design and then went back and ruined it? Essentially.
That was Tavis.
Tavis. I would have bought that shirt. It looked really good, but oh well. Of course, by the time I started watching, it was probably gone. But
the thing that surprised me was you know, they said do the t-shirt, and they didn't give any sort of brand guide.
Yeah, they kind of left it up to the kids to understand. Like, this is going to be a Strip Search t-shirt. You've seen the Strip Search logo and stuff. If you know what kind of, you know, what you need to do in this kind of situation, then you're going to do it right.
Right. I mean, it's like they left the creativity very much up to everybody else. And I think if they started giving them any other pointers other than make a Strip Search shirt, I think we would have had a narrowed field of more of the same, I think, what would have happened.
But one of the big things about when you do t-shirt design is, especially for a brand, is you do need a branding guide. And I think it's kind of a misnomer to say if you give five graphic designers a branding guide, they'll all make the same thing. That's quite simple.
Well, no, I guess I didn't mean it like that, because when you do, you know, put up restrictions, you can really squeeze some creativity out of it. But I did personally like the more so freedom that they had for their own interpretations. But you know, otherwise you would have had like however many, like 10 pink and purple shirts, and that would have been it, I think. But I understand what you say about the making shirts to the brand, but...
Yeah. Looking back at that episode, after having seen the Magic episode, it's interesting to see that the way that that t-shirt was judged was essentially the same as what was the directives given for that, for the Magic the Gathering challenge, where they were, the things they were discussing was what incorporated the colors, what incorporated the sort of the
exactly
ideas. They were at least sort of judging it based on that, but hadn't maybe set it up front. Perhaps if, you know, those had been those two challenges had been reversed, you would have got a very different t-shirt product.
I agree, and I think that's part of the thing is because the thing to remember is most people that go into webcomics do venture into freelance work as well. Mm-hmm. And most of the time that does include graphic design. And it's kind of trying to be purposefully ignorant of the topic by not forcing or by not addressing some of that world in this world. You know what I mean? Hmm. I mean, I what I liked was when they showed Lexi working on, you know, working on client work and showing that she is a freelancer too, and I think that overall was what gave her a lot of the strength she had over the competition.
Yeah, I speaking of things I'd like to see in the next one is like more of like the skateboard competition where they actually have like a client coming in there asking for or whatnot, where a lot of, because I really did like the elimination challenges, and I would like to see more of that. Everybody has these ideas, you have this amount of time to do it, and then seeing more of that art in the not elimination stage. I would have liked to see a lot more of that, and I'm really hoping that they will if they're doing a strip search next year.
Yeah, the daily challenges didn't really have a lot of drawing in them, but I think that was one of the things I found kind of good about it. That what they were saying was through the daily challenges, these are all the skill sets that you need to exist and as a successful webcomic artist. At the end of the day, what will save you is your ability to actually do the work, to do the strip, to do the writing. And I think I don't think that was a bad way of structuring it.
Yeah, I can see that, but more. Yeah, the episodes were kind of short as far as what most people are used to for reality TV stuff. I mean, it's like, I mean, even an hour show with commercials is about 40 minutes of
42.
About 40 minutes.
Yeah, but you got to remember, one of those shows covers the entire day. So for the same amount of like a day of production here is 60 minutes plus, you know, for the final elimination challenge and everything.
Okay. I suppose. Yeah. Because, as what I was talking with Abby, basically this is how they actually did it. Everyone was there for 2 weeks. Even the ones that got eliminated, they went back to a hotel that they started in And nobody could leave until the whole thing was done being recorded, which was, like, interesting. I guess that's how they easily got Lexi back for that one time is, like, huh.
But that also makes sense because otherwise they would have to be buying plane tickets like the days that they're filming. You know, it makes a lot of sense if they would just buy everyone's return plane ticket, you know, up front and have them all leave on the same day.
Still must have been brutal for Alex.
Always the person that goes home first. I always feel like no. That's I would never want to be the first to go home because like God damn it.
Yeah, I loved it how they had, you know, so much screen time with him for, like, the first episode or two. It's just like, yeah, he's gone. He's not going to survive the first elimination. You know the poor fool's going down.
No.
Well, if you actually look at it, Katie's was far better than Alex in the first elimination. I mean, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
Because In the Alex's, it's two panels of talking head and of talking heads and one panel of a comet coming out of Earth or something. I don't know. And well, Katie does something that's far more funny.
Yeah,
kind of a deer in the headlights effect, really, with Alex.
Yeah, I think so. But that was also really. I mean, it's really interesting. I'm not trying to dog on that person, but it's like it really had the feeling of really heavy. Oh, this goes back to something I actually wanted to say earlier. It really had the sense of clearly very Penny Arcade inspired, and a lot of web cartoonists will end up doing that when they're a fan of one particular webcomic. They seem to try to emulate that. But then in the end, it's like when you're thinking about like at the beginning or in the middle of the webcomics era, we were inspired by print comics or newspaper comics. A lot of people would bring up Calvin and Hobbes as their inspiration, but how many people did you see emulating a Calvin and Hobbes comic? It was never like that clear cut when you see like people that are trying to basically make a Penny Arcade sort of ripoff, you know, in so many ways.
Well, it's also a lot easier, though, to emulate the mechanics of Penny Arcade, just the artwork and the, how can I say it? I mean, the writing's very forward. It's with Calvin and Hobbes, there's all this buildup that's going on, and there's all this careful phrasing, I mean, with Penny Arcade, a lot of the humor is it's the cartooning equivalent of just punching someone in the face. Not the actual jokes, but it's straight, it's to the point, it's obvious.
I wouldn't say all the time.
Not all the time.
They actually have a lot of really clever strips.
Yeah, but the low-hanging fruit is what a lot of people are just grabbing for.
Alex's stuff felt more like their earlier work.
Yeah.
Both in art and writing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Anything else before we get going here? Anything else that anyone would like to see the next time they try a strip search?
I want to see a dark horse in there that's I'm a story comic, damn it, and I'm going to win.
I'd like to see not another strip search because this one was special.
I'd like to see an actual strip search challenge. Who can secret the most cocaine on their body?
Oh, yeah. God, no. It was the worst with the, if you look at the strip search tag on Tumblr, like, I'm going to see what they get up to a strip search. And then there's always someone's butt.
Yeah. That's just the rule of the internet.
Yeah.
Can't believe someone can rule 34 bloody strip search.
Yeah,
it's happened.
I would like to see more artistic challenges, and also more so looking at storytelling challenges and such, approaching that particular angle. I really hope that they would do another one, but I guess the question would be: is like now that we've seen it. Are people going to try to pre-prepare for certain things or not? Are they going to have to switch things up, step up the game? Otherwise, it could eventually, if they kept doing, it could turn into one of those, what ultimately almost every reality show turns into. But I don't know.
All the pre-preparation you can do, though. I mean, yeah, you can try and do tacky little things for, like, you know, memorize.
Right, right. Especially when you kind of drop out of Skype and you don't hear the rest of you what you said.
You can try memorizing Penny Arcade's history. I mean, you could watch the entire archives. You could memorize a map of Seattle. But I really don't think those are going to help you much. It's, you know, the skill sets that would be required for the artistic challenges, just getting out the egg timer, drawing something for 90 minutes, or just, you know, working on your writing, working on your cartooning. I mean, that practice, that's going to make people a better artist. And so if people pre-prepare that way, it's just going to make for a stronger product on the show. But the thing you have to remember is that Abby, who is probably one of the least artistically depolished people on the show, managed to hang in the longest just because, you know, she was able
to crank it out.
Yeah, and she was basically second. It's amazing that, you know, and she probably got quite possibly dogged on the most as far as anybody out there.
Well, the thing is, Mike was really harsh about her cutout.
Yeah, and he didn't even meet her yet. And he actually
demeaned her when she was at one of the eliminations, saying, "Here, I got to fix this because it's been bugging me the whole time." And remember that?
Well, yeah, but that was the dark horse contestant of the thing.
Yeah, and then she told him to go suck a dick. You know, it was great.
And the thing is, you could be a dick right back to him, and it's great. If I ever met him, I'm gonna say, "Hey, Mike, your name's almost like alcoholic, but not quite."
What?
Sounds like alcoholic.
I'd kind of like to see you on the next strip search just to see how everybody else reacts to your bad puns and jokes. I would love
to get into a verbal fight with Mike and get your ass handed to you.
It'd be funny.
Yeah, you're going to have to bring some.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ben, but if you're trying to be, if that's your idea of smartassness, you're going to get owned.
Oh,
that was something.
Apparently, everyone thinks his name is pronounced
"Crawlic." Trust me, it's you have not yet begun to hear. Well, I can.
Oh boy, I don't know.
How long did it take you to come up with that one, though?
30 seconds.
Yeah,
30 seconds. Okay,
it shows. Yeah,
I'll see the benefit.
Okay, so
well,
some artists work better with a time limit, and some work better with, you know, as much time as they need.
I don't do punchline comics anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I know you don't do punchline comics, Ben.
Oh, this explains a lot.
All right, so that's going to be it for this episode of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. Once again, I want to thank Mary Cagle from Kiwi Blitz for coming back and talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, Monty, thanks for coming back eventually after apparently I had the wrong time last time. You were right. I was wrong and you didn't get on. So I apologize.
Central time, Fez. It's where you live.
Conspiracies.
So, vegetables for dessert on Tumblr. Dark comedy to warm your cold black heart.
And Terrence, thanks for we finally were able to get you on the show. I know that you probably got to go to work in just a few minutes, but
it's always a way. Thanks for having me, though. It was really great.
Absolutely. And of course, Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Thank you for having me again.
And I've been Fess from the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. Be sure to look for Abby Howard's my interview with Abby Howard. And if you haven't listened to it yet, listen to the part one of the Strip Search commentary. See you next time. I'm probably going to crank these out and have these out earlier than I would normally would, since...
Try to keep it topical.
Keep it topical, and I'm going to get Abby's interview up at the same time as I get this one out, I think, for the maximum amount
for the rest of us.
Yeah. Trying to take advantage of the Abby Howard push since her Kickstarter started.
She's
like
doing awesome.
Yeah, she apparently made her $9,000 goal in 17 minutes. And now
that's very good. Cool. At least it's a real Kickstarter, not something.
Right, right. And this one's it's already like 61,000. It's freaking nuts.
That was the other thing I meant to say during the show, actually. Did anyone find that Lexi putting up her Kickstarter before she was eliminated from the competition was a bit of a spoiler as such?
I don't think so.
No, it's because the thing is, everyone uses Kickstarter to crowdsource things now.
Yeah, it just I looked through it, I thought to myself, this is the stuff you'd use the Penny Arcade Power Machine for, though. But
right,
yeah,
I don't think maybe. She did like say like, oh, I was talking to Koo about like the best way to set this up. So I think you could have interpreted it as like they talked, and this seemed like a good way for her to get some money right now. Because it's not like, oh, if she won the $15,000, she wouldn't need any more money right now.
No, but
you always need more money.
More money. Check it out. All right, we have. Yeah. I probably would have waited until after the end of the episode, just, but you know, if she had talked and it was cool already, then you know she could easily do that. But, and I bet that a lot of that $15,000 would basically go to living and eating, while you could stay at home and work on your comic. I think that's a lot of what that money would be used for.
It's not expensive to move cities either.
Yeah, but yeah. There's that too. A lot of that. I didn't even think about moving.
But they have. I was actually really impressed by, you know, like they put Katie's site together for her and made the shirts, you know, probably at no cost to her. Like they've done more for her already than I thought they were going to do for a while.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, if you're brought into that family, I'm pretty sure that's. That kind of goes with it.
So is a dysfunctional family.
What family isn't?
Yeah, Ben, I have you on the show now regularly. If that's not dysfunctional.
All right, well, I got to go. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
No problem, and see you later.
See ya.
Thanks, Mary. Hey, when you went through with Abby, did you get much into what was happening in the house behind the scenes as well? That didn't get shown on the TV show, or was that not something could be talked about with
the
contracts?
It sounds like some of that will probably go into the DVD. I think I mentioned earlier on the show that a lot of it was the earlier in the week. It was more so just, you know, everyone just getting to know each other and chatting and doing all that sort of thing, and then things kind of chilled out, and then it was just, you know, hanging out and stuff. She didn't really describe in detail much of everything, but you know, I can't imagine it being much more than what you and I would do if we ended up basically going to a retreat somewhere with a bunch of other artists. Of what would we do? We'd end up just chatting up, or like when you meet people at a convention, you just sort of chat up, kind of hang out. As you get invited, we can't go anywhere really, but you know, if you get invited to, hey, we're gonna go hang out by the pool, or we're gonna go out to eat, sort of thing, you know. I can't imagine it being too fantastic, except I know that Erica brought it was mentioned in one of the episodes where she brought like a yoga DVD and a bunch of the girls did yoga in the morning sort of thing.
One thing I found that was interesting was there was that brief mention, I think it was in one of the elimination challenges, where I think Mike said to someone, and you know, someone told me you've actually been drawing in the house in your spare time. Just that little thing just made me really wonder, well, what is going on behind the scenes? You know, if you had that many artists in the same place, surely a lot of people would be drawing in their spare time, sort of thing. But
yeah, they should have been.
Yeah. It would have been good practice. But, yeah, but just one of those things that just makes me curious. Yeah, what people were getting up to, but. It'd be interesting to see what comes out on the DVD.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see what type of Kickstarter they run for the next season, too. It will just be interesting to see how they choose to operate that, because that's how I'm assuming they're going to try and fund it.
Oh, yeah. It's certainly got the chops now for to be its own standalone Kickstarter rather than a stretch goal and a part of a larger one.
Right.
Well, yeah. I could actually see them getting more sponsorship, and you'll have pictures of Mike and Jerry like with certain fast food items on the desk while they're banting back and forth during elimination challenges, drinking a McDonald's milkshake. And
isn't this the moistest Nando chicken you've ever tasted? Yeah,
I don't know. I don't.
Well, and maybe even playing Xbox One while waiting on the challenge is like.
Oh God!
I don't have an issue with sponsorship, obvious sponsorship like that, or product placement. I mean, especially if you can.
I'm actually surprised that Mike didn't whip out his Surface Pro and started fiddling with it during one of those things because he plugs the shit out of his.
This episode brought to you through Google Glass.
Actually, I won't be surprised if he does that. The thing is, I'm saying this jokingly, but Kitty Hawk actually accuses Mike of being a corporate shill.
It's quite possible. I mean, I don't know them, but you know, if that's what you got to do when you're an artist, you know, it's you get money where you can, so you can keep doing what you want. Yeah. And granted, they're probably not in any sort of harm of losing money anytime soon, but you know, it's,
no, but they got themselves to that point though, and that's part of the process.
Well, Koo got themselves to that point.
True. At least they picked up Koo when he offered.
Yeah, that was you know, it's kind of like it's something that everybody wants to try to do and emulate. The next episode for news, I have scheduled for June 30th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's got to be a better way to try to sort that. But
it's just Central Time. People there on the other side of the world can figure out UTC.
People can understand
using time zones you're not in that you confuse everyone.
No, this Webcast Beacon Network schedules in Eastern. That's just how it's always been.
And Animation Aficionados always schedules in Central, and we have people from England, we had people from Australia, we had people from
from
South America.
Why would Eastern
have this problem? You have this problem.
No,
we don't.
No.
And we only schedule in Central.
Ben, the problem is that daylight savings didn't match up with Australia's daylight savings. Whether I said Eastern, Central, Mountain, or Pacific, it doesn't matter. Those are all going to be the same because U.S. daylight savings time. Now, if I said UTC, maybe that would have been easier to plug in. But doesn't UTC also technically change when the daylight savings happens?
Like I said, I've never had this problem, and I've scheduled people all around the world.
I just... You know, tabby in a Google, you know, whatever time is EST to Australian time, and usually gives you the answer. The website I was using didn't account for daylight savings either of those weeks.
Yeah. It's mostly Terrence's fault, I'm going to say, because I've scheduled a lot of different people too.
If you want to have guests appear again, you don't say it's their fault.
Well, Terrence isn't really a guest.
I'm happy to wear that. It was.
He's just here for you to use and abuse, Fess.
No, well, actually, I ended up just recently officially adding Terrence and Ben to the crew list because I actually updated it. Because you guys have been on long enough that, you're crew.
Sweet.
Just got to add more news articles to the doc is all.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit earlier than the day of. All right, so, well, I got to get going, but thank you guys all again for being here, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. Catch you later.
Bye. Bye.